from the book The Open Door of Emptiness by James Lowe. Chapter 3. Open to Life, the Heart of Awareness. Part 6. The empty and open indeterminacy of I am. One of the key aspects of the Dzogchen view is Kada. Kada means primordial purity. Primordial purity means that, from the very beginning, our mind has never existed as a thing. If you have a thing, like a cup of pure water, that could be contaminated by adding something to it. We'd then say that the water is spoiled. Something can be spoiled in its simplicity by coming into contact with something else. That's obvious. But what could contaminate nothing? And how would you put something in relation to nothing? Because actually, nothing and something are not in opposition. Ice cream and donuts are in opposition because they are different things. You can put them on a plate and look at them. And as you set one in contrast with another, by comparing qualities, you can distinguish between them. So you can say, this looks like ice cream, and that looks like a donut. In the same way, you can distinguish between different kinds of cars, clothes, houses, and so on. Between some things, there are many different kinds of differences. But what about nothing? How would you hold nothing in one hand and something in the other hand and compare them? Nothing dissolves the game of compare and contrast. Logically, you might think that something and nothing are opposites. But because nothing cannot be established, cannot be found, it deconstructs the binary oppositions out of which we construct the narratives of our lives. Oppositions such as male or female, young or old, good or bad, England or not England, tea or coffee, and all the rest of the mutually exclusive signs and categories. Comparing and contrasting brings things close enough together so that you can see sameness and difference. For example, if you go into a clothes shop, you can look at two different coats. One is really gorgeous, but wow, it's a lot of money. Whilst the other is not quite so nice, but it's £100 cheaper. You have to make your own decision about whether you want the quality or the money. And that depends on your immediate budget, where you might wear the coat, and all the other pertinent factors. This kind of comparison depends on reification. Firstly, we need to establish that there are two separate entities. We see shapes and colours. We hear sounds. But for this to be cognitively meaningful, it has to be interpreted. And to do this, we rely on our thoughts and feelings, which are transient, and the moments of perception upon which they comment, which are also transient. Subject and object arise and pass. The continuity of our sense of self seems to be built upon an accumulation of memories, assumptions, plans, and so on. Yet our mind is different. It is not a thing among things. It is the experiencer, the clarity which reveals the ever-changing field of experience. This is not our usual way of identifying the experiencer. For example, if I ask, who am I? What am I as the experiencer? I might say that I like being here with you, and I've got a bit of a cold, and I'm a bit tired. The basic experience is that I'm here, and that is coloured by me being a bit tired and having a bit of a cold. Thus the subject, me, as I take myself to be, has a certain situational shape, and that influences the kind of experiences I have. But who is the one who has the cold? I am. That's a statement. Okay. So who is the one who says, I have the cold? I am the one who says, I have the cold. But who is that one? We have an infinite regress here because the answer to each of these questions is formulated by employing another statement. And all of these statements have the same form. I am. I am the one who is this, that, and the other. Who is the one who says, I am? Please, miss, it's me. I am. I know the answer. I am me. Oh, good boy. You're so clever. So clever as to be completely stupid. For this is a process of self-seduction. The question is not truly being asked, because we already have the answer. The one who looks is me. Who is looking? Me. Are you sure? Yes, of course I'm sure. And so we are blinded by the easy option, the ready-made answer. This is our main problem, that we are on a well-oiled track which hides the door to truly, directly seeing our nature. Paradoxically, the factors which hide us from ourselves are precisely the tools upon which we rely to make sense of ourselves and our world. Our knowledge, assumptions, fantasies, the rich variety of our mental creativity is exactly the display of the mind which hides the mind. For example, those of you who live here in Brighton can name the streets, can indicate that if you go down that street, there's a really nice cafe. You are introducing the visitor to Brighton. Yes, but actually you're introducing them to your Brighton. You're putting your Brighton onto the potential of this town. If the newcomer were to wander around the streets, they might find another Brighton. But you've been living here a long time, so you know Brighton, and so you direct people according to your personal map. We do exactly the same with ourselves. We put forward our version of ourselves as if we were describing something truly existing, when in fact what we're doing is creating a temporary constellation. bees are quite different. So, for example, I can say, I am a man. It's kind of difficult to know precisely what it is to be a man. I used to be in a men's group and would sit in a circle and discuss what it means to be a man. We would talk and talk, and there was no end to the discussion, no final agreed description. This is because man is an empty signifier. It's like a sausage skin. You can stuff it with anything. It's like asking, what is love? You can talk for thousands of years about what love is because you can put almost any content into the signifier. Who am I? This is the best sausage skin of all. Any idea you have can be applied here. I'm hot, I'm cold, I'm young, I'm old, and so on. Whatever is arising and passing will momentarily fill the sausage skin and appear to be true and right. Before lunch, you say, I'm hungry. And after lunch, you say, I'm sleepy. You're always something, but that something is on the point of vanishing. How is it that I am can be filled with so many seeming truths? Because it is nothing. I is how we refer to our presence. It is not an entity, not a thing or a substance. The openness or emptiness of I is the quick way to see the openness and emptiness of the mind. The mind, our mind, our awareness, our unmediated presence here and now, is like a mirror. A mirror can fill with any reflection because it doesn't have a content of its own. If we look at the painting on the wall behind me, it has a content. When you look at it again and again, you see the same pattern of colours. It is announcing itself as something in particular. But our mind is not like that. Our mind, the basis of our experience, is the openness which reveals our becoming, our manifesting as the ceaseless flow of change. We, the presenting subject, change according to circumstances all the time. It is our very non-defined quality, our beyond-definition quality, which allows us to manifest in responsiveness to other situations. Therefore, self-knowledge, as an accumulation of information about oneself, is a red herring and a cul-de-sac. To truly know yourself is to know that you are unknowable, ungraspable, yet always present. The truth of us is not established by knowledge. It's not about knowledge. It's already present as the actuality of our being. When you are at home, in and as yourself, you don't know how you're going to be, how you will become in the next 5 minutes. Nobody can predict how they are going to be, for being is open, and ungraspable. And becoming, manifesting, is always a complex, momentary event. The more at home we are in our actual self, rather than in our self-narrative, the more freed we are to respond. And then our response is situationally evoked, and its basis is the openness of indeterminacy. It's not a lost indeterminacy, as in a psychological depersonalization, where a person doesn't feel like themselves or can't recognize themselves. This is not about a cognitive feedback loop that reassures me I'm still me, because these are the kind of sensations that I can recognize. This pattern is me. Usually, we have a template of how we normally are, the habitual feeling tone of being me. And this becomes the guarantor or touchstone that I am myself. If there's any variation away from this felt sense and its associated memories, we feel, oh, I don't feel so well today. Or, oh, I feel really excited. I haven't felt like this for a while. And we notice that we are veering away from what has become the standardized version of ourselves. These movements then generate hopes and fears. In Dzogchen, we relax out of this familiar matrix of identity. For there is no end to the work of making micro-adjustments to the temporary flow of the content of our experience. The more we're trying to rectify ourselves, to bring ourselves back into alignment with our template, the more we find ourselves struggling against the fact of impermanence, the actual dynamic nature of existence. In the field of experience, there is no enduring structure with which to align. All such seeming structures are installed through our own interpretation. For example, when our body is balanced, we are aligned with the force of gravity. We then feel centered. Our skeleton supports our weight. Our muscles can relax, and our breath is easy, as the diaphragm is free to move. This physical balance occurs due to our harmony with our environment. When we walk, we have to find our balance in each moment. Balance is not a thing that we have, but a sensibility, the optimal way of opening in all directions. Balance is not a thing that we have, but a sensibility. And the fact that we find our balance through sensing it means that our sense can lead us astray, as ballet students find when they observe their actual posture in the mirror and see that internally it feels different. In that example, at least, you have something that can be clearly observed. But when it comes to mental and emotional experience, balance is much more difficult. We become used to our habitual attitudes, and that normality gives them the feel of being balanced even when we are fused in attitudes and behaviours that are well off kilter. Being lost in familiar places is difficult to recognise, as the familiarity hides the lostness. the relative balance of left and right that allows us to feel centered is different from the profound balance of resting in the simplicity of the mind itself. Experiences of objects and one's subjectivity needs constant rebalancing. Yet the actual experiencer, the mind itself, is not an entity and is beyond relativization and is always relaxed and balanced, whatever is happening. We can look at this directly, for we are here, experiencing something, then something else, and so on. A stream of experience is occurring. Who is the experiencer? Each of us is the experiencer. What is the direct taste of that experiencer? What is registering for the experiencer seems to have two aspects: what we take to be the object and what we take to be the subject. This is what we stay with in meditation, not going to the subject side, not going to the object side, but staying with our own presence itself, the clarity which reveals the co-emergence of the subject and the object. So we're sitting here. You can hear at least some of the words I'm saying if you're not drifting off completely. And you have your own thoughts and feelings. It is as if from the object side, words are coming out of my mouth and going to your ear. Something is coming to you, some object, and you have your subjective reaction. You experience my voice. Is this true? You experience your thoughts. Is that true? Is the experiencer of both my voice and your thoughts the same? When you attend directly to your experience in this way, you see that what I'm saying and your thoughts about what I'm saying are both experiences for you. Now this you, who is open in all directions, is not composed of the ingredients of your self-narrative. It is the experiencer of that self-narrative, without being caught up in it or defined by it. The content of what I'm saying and the tone of my voice, and so on, is the object side presentation. The subject side is your response to that, with feelings and thoughts. You are experiencing both, but you feel like the subject side. So there is a double move. If you like, there's a sense that you're existing on two planes simultaneously. You are both the empty experiencer, which is simply revealing the subject and object into play, and you are also the particular thoughts and feelings that you have, and which seem to constitute who you are. Most of the time, we are so caught up in identification with our thoughts and feelings that this more open, empty sense of the experiencer is disregarded, or rather made invisible by being taken for granted. It's always there, and it is open empty, ungraspable, yet, because we fixate on the manifest, it is as if the unmanifest is not present at all. The experiencer is the ground of our existence. It is our awareness, our presence. In Tibetan, it is called Rigpa. It is not something mystical or fantastical, but the ordinary, everyday, luminous presence that is the basis of all our experiences. It's not our personality, and it's not generated out of our history or our thoughts. It's the revealer of everything, including the interpretations by which we respond to the rest of the field. When we look around the room, we see people's faces, and from the look on their faces, we can imagine a little of how they might be feeling. But we will never know. My experience of me seems so much more intimate than my experience of you. I'm having the full meanness of me and just some sense of you. I'm getting a lot more me than you. It is this which gives us the sense it all starts with me. I have to work hard to try to work out what's happening for you. But the meanness of me comes first. It seems to be a given. This is how duality reveals itself. In taking myself to be this individual subjectivity, with all the work that entails, I focus on the details and ignore the intrinsic clarity which illuminates the non-dual field. This is a bias, the prejudice of overemphasis on the content of our own personal experience. Due to this, we live our lives as if life is a problem to be solved. And so we have to think very hard. What am I going to do? How am I going to relate to this person? What's the whole deal? We are busy, busy, busy all day long, thinking, planning, making adjustments, trying to get it right. All this activity blinds us to the fact that how you are is just as much a part of my experience as how I am. It's different from my experience of myself, but then, if I take a bite of an apple, and then I take a bite of an orange, they're different, and we'd say these are different kinds of experience. The experience of me being me and my experience of looking at you are different experiences, but maybe they are different in the way that an apple is different from an orange. The habitual interpretations embedded in our everyday use of language makes it difficult to see what we are up to. The terms I, me, myself seem to be so evident in their meaning that we are taken in by their illusion of finality. This view suggests that there isn't an essential personal truth or core inside ourselves. Rather, our subjectivity is part of the stream of experience. But the experience of subjectivity is taken to be the hallmark of experience, and then there is confusion as the transient is taken to define the self as something enduring. It is normal for us to feel that I am here, inside my head, looking out at the world. I am having my experience of the world. Yet actually, the world presents as experience, and I present as experience. These two streams of experience are crisscrossing all the time. They are not two separate things, but are like little pulsations of water within a big river. They are moving together within the wider movement. It is by disinvesting our subjectivity of the burden of being the totality of who we are that we start to experience the space of our being. So rather than feeling that it's all up to me, I've got to think, I've got to go back inside myself, and I'll tell you when I'm clear, just don't disturb me. We can let go of the transient constructs and stop building our illusory, individual, isolated self out of them. Conflicts often arise from the sense that you being you is robbing me of me being me, so leave me alone. This is very strange, for in this view, myself is now something I have to protect, like a little egg, and carefully carry around with me, for it's very fragile. Yet the fact is that me being me is me being me with you. So how can I, on my own, sort out how I am if the self that I'm trying to sort out is the self that I am with you? Listen, I think we have to have a trial separation. I'm going to go away, and when I am clear about who I am, I'll come back and see you. In this way, you and I remain separate, and the weirdness of life is ignored. We can also retreat inside ourselves in the search for clarity. Yet, this simply further separates I from me. Thus, in my interactions with the world, I experience myself and I experience the environment. The self experience, or the subjective experience, is an experience. It is not the experiencer. But it is the experience of an experience which implicitly claims to be the experiencer. This is truly tricky territory. When you formulate an experience, such as, for example, I am tired, it seems that the experiencer is talking and, by means of that talking, is defining themselves. Yet, by making the next statement with a similar grammatical structure and a different semantic content, this I is redefining itself. Such vagaries of identification point directly to the illusory status of I as denoting a self-substance. Observing this directly for oneself is extremely useful. Teachings given at Bright Elm Centre, Brighton, UK, December 2012. Revised by James Lowe. From the book The Open Door of Emptiness, a collection of public talks and teachings by James Lowe. Read by Wendy, February 2026.